This podcast is a short chapter out of my recent book, which is titled 4C. It's available from Amazon as an ebook or as a paperback. And it goes into some stories from my youth as I attended a grammar school in the 1960s. This chapter is called Moral Turpitude. Our class, 4C, registered in one of the basement rooms, out of sight, out of mind. It is normally an art room, strange as it only has artificial light with no windows and heating pipes running along the ceiling. I suppose the so-called academic subjects get the best rooms in the grammar, and art get the basement that was never intended as a teaching space. Our teacher, Miss Goff, is rarely on time, and often doesn't even show up for registration. Debbie has neat handwriting, so she does the teacher's register, and Davy takes it to the school office at the end of registration. I guess the teacher can get away with it because we are down in the dungeon and no one can see us. She isn't the only teacher that absents himself from their classes a bit too regularly. Ronnie Tate in English is forever leaving his classes unattended, and no matter how often it happens, he never seems to get into bother, not even when the classes get out of control and disturb others. If some classes were down here, there would be a riot, but 4C are a very placid lot. For the last year or so, I've been teaching some of the class maths in registration. It all started when I was being pestered to let everyone copy my homework, but I refused. Paddy Nicol would spot that, and suddenly the rest of the class would be improving their grades with all the same answers. So instead, I offered to teach anyone wanting help. Sometimes those who are a bit slower on the uptake in maths just need a few extra examples before the ideas slide into place. It spilt over into class in October. Paddy was trying to explain simultaneous equations, and most of the class had completely blank expressions with no idea how to tackle the questions on the board. I think only Edward and myself were feeling confident about the questions. Paddy got a bit exasperated, as he could see the class weren't trying at all and they were baffled. He tried to ask Terry why he couldn't understand when his grades were getting better, and Terry just blurted it out. "Bobby's been teaching us when we can't follow in class." I thought I was in for it, but Paddy just seemed to soften, and he asked what I'd been doing. I simply said I'd been doing lots of examples of maths questions and what others pick it up. He got me up to the front of the class, handed me some chalk, and said, "Now you can teach the whole class, explain simultaneous equations." I quite enjoyed being the centre of attention. And after a couple of examples, Paddy asked the class how many understood now. A sea of hands went up. Most were probably just being supportive of my first attempt at classroom teaching. And I'm sure Paddy realised this too. He wasn't bothered. Some teachers would have taken it completely differently. At the end of the class, he said, "Bobby, you're a born teacher and the best maths student I've taught in years." I was quite chuffed, but knowing that he only got the C and D classes to teach, it wasn't as big a compliment as it first appeared. But I'm sure he meant it most sincerely. Our basement registration classroom had one big plus to it. We are out of sight and out of mind. In late November, our basement sanctuary reverberated with a different atmosphere. Someone, I can't remember who, brought in some plastic mistletoe. Well, Christmas is only a month away. It was getting quickly decided that every morning we would draw cards until a boy and a girl drew an ace and they would be required to kiss under the mistletoe, or the delectation of the assembled classmates. They had all seemed very innocent, and the chances seem slim that these individuals might become the spectacle. The first morning, Florence and Ian drew the aces. It was fun with the banter. Ian was the shortest in the class, and he got the usual egging on. Want a step ladder to help you, lad? Flo was fairly tall and towered over Ian. She wasn't the prettiest of girls, with her fiery red curly hair and freckles that were so numerous they just merged into one another. She was, however, very keen to get started, and wasn't bothered by Ian's lack of stature, or his unruly mop of blonde curls that made him look like a sheep ready for shearing. She picked him up, sat him on the desk, and moved in for the kill. She certainly snogged his face off, and only the bell signalling the end of registration terminated her assault. As we headed for class and backslapped him for being the first brave victim, he muttered, "She used her tongue." Flo must have had more experience than we gave her credit for. This might be an interesting experiment. Edward, being new to the class, was initially excused from taking part. But once it all got underway, he found the activity so interesting he volunteered to take part. As chance would have it, I drew the first ace next morning and waited with dread as the girls drew cards. There were a couple I wanted to avoid. Becky and her BO was a right turn-off, and Sandra with her blackheads was no better. Relief when Debbie drew the ace. No struggle to kiss the prettiest girl in class, except would I be a good enough kisser for her. It was feeling strange, as we were ready pals without any physical contact. She took control. Well, at close to 15, the girls generally take control. We were soon in a clinch, and she was a great kisser of lips and tongue, doing all the right things, to say nothing of her teenage breasts pressing against my chest. I was losing control, and I felt a stiffening down below. How do I get out of this without getting a roasting from my assembled classmates? Debbie moved us towards the desk, and she finished the kiss, and I slumped into a chair and let my ardour cool out of sight. Her cheeks were flushed, and she winked at me. She had noticed, and I got the distinct impression she was pleased with herself for having made such a noticeable impact on a young man. This morning's activity, with its element of a game of chance, coupled with sexual exploration, continued on most days that winter, except the few occasions when our registered teacher deigned to turn up. We had continued through to February with a very tattered piece of mistletoe, and most of us had been victims a few times. It wasn't to last. We were rumbled. Some bastard must have ratted us out. The deputy head and his female sidekick, I think her title was woman's assistant, basically disciplinary lead for girls, arrived one morning in February. They were both ancient and feared throughout the school. He was regarded as a hard bastard who took it out on boys because he was overlooked for head teacher. Mr. Bailden had a shock of close-cropped silver hair, slightly thinning at the back, and more lines on his face than graph paper. I never saw him with a smile on his face, and there certainly wasn't one today. A face like thunder and full of righteous indignation. He was a Bible thumper. I had the misfortune of being in his biology class in third year. He started every lesson with a Bible quote. Why he thought that was appropriate in a science class, I do not know. But he was a sort of fire and brimstone zealot that would put any right-thinking person off religion. His biology classroom always stank of rancid meat. He revelled in dissecting roadkill and displaying their organs for his class, so there were always a couple of rotting carcasses in his lab, which stank out half the corridor. Miss Barnes only dealt with the girls, and had her grey hair tied up in an austere bun. Both swayed around in their black teacher's gowns, looking the part of some vampires, ready to strike their unsuspecting victims. A few teachers wore gowns, a real hang-up from Victorian days. The senior staff seemed to revel in their gowns as a status symbol. Most teachers had dispensed with gowns, except for history and languages. For some reason, they retained them. I once heard a history teacher say to a colleague the gown protected their clothes from the chalk dust. I'm not so sure. I think they just like to show off, rushing down the corridors like Batman. We were lined up in rows and given a talking to about moral turpitude, which went totally over our heads. They ranted and raved at us, but the more they nagged and shouted, the more it became clear they had no idea what we were doing, and certainly no idea how to discipline us. They were at a loss, and were doing their best to hide that from us. Eventually, the girls were led away by Miss Barnes for further talking to, and we were left in Baildon's tender care. I was beginning to enjoy his discomfort. I twigged they had no idea how long our moral lapse had been going on, and our registration teacher was not going to admit we'd been largely unsupervised for months. The best approach for us all was to play dumb and baffled and leave the teachers to their difficulty. His response to this predicament was to institute a full uniform inspection. He was going to give us lines for failing to wear grey socks, or failing to have name labels on a jacket and trousers. And as with any class, he was sure to find a good few miscreants who had let their moral standards slip by wearing brown socks. After another wasted 45 minutes, we were dismissed, with half the class getting lines for uniform infractions. When the class resumed in English, we learnt from the girls they got the same treatment and lines for frilly knickers. To all intents and purposes, we got away with our activities, because they would never admit to a lack of supervision. That was one up for the rebels. February also marked the departure of Edward. He had fitted really well into our class, and someone in class to at least give me some competition in maths and physics. His English was pretty good by February, and he was making friends in the class. He often hung around with Davy, Terry and myself at lunchtime, and we chatted about the usual things, family, schoolwork, sport, pop music. Despite his English improving, he always avoided giving much away about family or what home was like. He shifted the conversation ever so gently onto something else as soon as he could. One day he didn't turn up for class, and I was called to the head's office at morning break. "In you come, Bobby. You'll have seen that Edward wasn't in registration this morning. Unfortunately, he had to leave town without the chance to say goodbye to all his friends. His father came into school yesterday evening and explained that the father would be moved to a big city." He paused. "I don't know if you guessed, but Edward's family are political refugees and were only here until new identities could be arranged for all of them. It was felt that it would be easier for them to start anew in a big city where they could be more anonymous than our small town." I suspected something wasn't right. Edward always changed the subject when we talked about Hong Kong. And although he was friendly, there was always something he seemed to hide from us. "I'm not surprised you worked that out, Bobby, but I suspect you kept your suspicions to yourself." "Yes, sir. It wasn't my place to pry too much." "Edward's father, Mr. Lee, asked me to specifically thank you for helping Edward settle into school. He wanted 4C to know. They've all made him so welcome. He gave me this jade elephant, one of the few possessions his family was able to bring from China, as a thank you to the school. And I'm going to place it on my study mantelpiece as a reminder of Edward's time here, and the support 4C gave this young man from abroad. I won't forget your assistance or the support you got from your class. It makes me very proud of this school and its pupils. It was sad that Edward didn't get a chance to say goodbye, but at least he enjoyed his time in 4C. And his English had improved markedly, despite a few choice phrases he'd picked up. I had the task of telling the class he was gone and his family were political refugees, who would now be resettled elsewhere. I've always said 4C were the friendliest class in the school, and we certainly proved that to the head. Now that's just one very small chapter in my short novel called 4C, reflecting on school days in a grammar school in the 1960s. And this is available from Amazon. You can also check all my books on my website, www.richiecunningham.com. That's www.richiecunningham.com, and the Richie is spelled R-I-T-C-H-I-E. Otherwise, you'll get something about happy days. And happy days for now. Goodbye.